Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the field hearing of the Joint House and Senate Transit Subcommittees. Before we do introductions and start, I wanted to let people know in the audience, if you're interested in testifying, to sign up with Abby Mann on the left here, on to your right. We will be leaving, I believe, at a time certain of around 2 p.m. So for those testifying, please keep that in mind. And before Senator Dibble and I make brief opening remarks, I wanted to have members of each of the House and Senate committees introduce themselves. So we're going to start with Senator Saltzman and move to the... And I don't know if Representative Holbrook wants to join us here. Or
I'm fine.
Okay. All right.
They should be working out for you.
I'm Kathy Saltzman. I represent the Woodbury, Lake Allen, Stillwater area. I apologize for having to leave early today because the bonding committee for the Senate is going to be at the Union Depot today. And I'm excited about the transit corridors on the East Metro area as well. So great bunch this morning. Thanks for all being here.
Hi, I'm Senator Mike Jungbauer from the north end of Anoka County. East Bethel, Bethel, Oak Grove, Burns Township, Elk River, Ramsey, and Anoka. And we really don't have any transit except the North Star bus and soon the North Star commuter rail.
And Frank Hornstein in my district is in southwest Minneapolis.
And I'm State Senator Scott Dibble, Chair of the Transit Subcommittee of the Transportation Committee, and I represent southwest and downtown Minneapolis. Was happy to host the committee and everyone on the bus tour, the field trip today. As we were shooting through downtown, we crossed into my district once we crossed over 7th Street. So welcome. And to my right is Michael Schmagen, who replaces Ben Brouse as my legislative assistant / committee administrator.
And I'm Jen Olson, State Senator, District 33. My district begins where the MinPass lane on I-394 ends.
I'm Linda Slocum, State Representative. You are in my district. Welcome. Beautiful, urban, small town. Richfield is fabulous. Thanks for being here.
I'm Senator Jim Carlson. I'm from Burnsville and Eagan. And we, on our tour, we came by the Cliff Road park and ride, and also we went by the new location for the transit center that's near Cedarvale. And that's, both of those are in my district.
I'm Sandy Mason, and I represent 38A, which is basically the western portion of Eagan, and then I've got three precincts in Burnsville along that very eastern border.
I'm Bernie Leader. I'm from northwestern Minnesota, Buffalo Commons in Canada.
My name is State Representative Melissa Workman. I represent Northern Brooklyn Park, everything north of 85th Avenue to the Champlin border, and then in Coon Rapids from an Oak Ramsey Community College down along the Mississippi River to the border of Fridley.
Well, being a loud Italian, I don't need a microphone. So, my name is Pat Garofalo. I represent Southern Lakeville, Farmington, and rural portions of Dakota and Goodhue County. Today on the tour, you didn't get a chance to see my district. However, when you drove by the Apple Valley Park and Ride lot, you saw the people parked there. They live in my district, so it's okay.
I'm Alice House at St. Paul and Falcon Heights.
Mary Lou Holbrook, Lakeville.
And in the back, we see Representative Neil Peterson has joined us. You want to give us a wave, Representative?
So, once again, thank you everyone for being here. It's a couple of brief remarks of introduction. Since we last gathered during the legislative session, quite a bit has happened, of course, in transportation and transit. We had the tragic bridge collapse, and there were some transit implications to that, and we'll hear a little bit more from the Met Council about that. And then also in August of this year, we had the UPA grant agreement, a very unique a grant that the Twin Cities was only one of several communities in the country to receive, and we'll hear quite a bit more about that as well. And of course, transit will be a very important part of the transportation discussion upcoming when we reconvene on February 12th. And so if there are members of the public that also are interested in just a general conversation about transit, that's on the agenda as well. So with that, again, I very much appreciated the Met Council and MnDOT participation in organizing the tour, and a special thank you to Judge Shetman, who collaborated with us in arranging this day. And I look forward to hearing more from the Met Council and the other public officials and the public that are here today. Thanks again.
Thanks, Frank, and Representative Hartman or Hornstein. now I'm starting what they do.
Everyone confuses us.
I just wanted to express my thanks as well to Judge Shetman and all of the staff at MnDOT and Met Council, as well as our own legislative staff, Abby Mann and Michael Schmegen, for putting together the field trip. This morning, especially want to thank you for the lunch. I'm always happiest right after lunch. It is always extremely interesting and very informative. I think Judd actually came up with the idea first of having the field trip. We work a lot on these issues in the legislature, and to get out of the Capitol and see on the ground exactly the effect of the priorities and the issues and exactly how it's going to affect the real world is very, very interesting. So it's very useful and very informative. And the purpose of this meeting is to expand a little bit upon what we heard on the bus, share it with a wider audience as well. If you have any questions that have percolated up since we were on the bus, or if you didn't get questions answered, we invite the committee to ask a lot of questions, and also to hear from other public officials and members of the public about their ideas, their thoughts around the Urban Partnership Agreement. With that, I think we'll start with a representative from the Met Council. Will that be you, Mr. Shetman? No, we want you to sit in the dunce chair.
thanks a lot. Is my phone working? No?
We move that chair. It's in public.
Well, anyway, I can speak loud. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I tell you, it was really exciting for me to see all of you on our bus tour this morning. I know that since the council and MnDOT were awarded this UPA grant, I have been talking to Representative Hornstein and Senator Dibble about putting the committee out to take a look at what the UPA really is. And I appreciate the nice comments about me putting this tour together. However, I actually played a very, very small role in that. Arlene McCarthy, Brian Lamb, John Levin, Craig Lamoth, folks back in Arlene's shop, and then our bus driver and Bill Gustafson, who put together the visuals for the bus tour. I thought really allow the folks or the committees to be able to see what we're talking about in a real life situation. So I know we've done that in the past with the Central Corridor, and we've talked about that with the 35W BRT and North Star in the past. And I really extend my thanks to those folks who did all the legwork for it. It's easy to come here and get the slap on the back, but they are the ones who really put it together. So my thanks go to them. As far as the Urban Partnership Agreement, the Metropolitan Council and MnDOT have been working very cooperatively on this. We are extremely excited to receive this grant, and we covered most of this on the bus tour. However, we do need the local match, and I know I talked on the bus as well about the importance of receiving the policy or the enabling language as quickly as possible. I can't make that point strong enough. I know the city of Minneapolis, and there are representatives here from Minneapolis, and folks from Metro Transit, we need as much time as we possibly can, especially for the folks in Minneapolis, to get Second and Marquette dug up and finished and in place by the I guess it's December 31st of 2009, they have to deliver that. And for the council, I know Arlene talked about this on our bus tour as well, but it takes time for us to site these parking right lots, purchase them, and then basically get them in the position where we're able to deliver parking right service out of those lots by September of 2009. We talked about what the local match is going to be. It's a mixture of trunk highway bonds, a general fund dollars, and general obligation dollars, and I'll break that down for you quickly. The general obligation bonds is roughly $17 million. It's just a little south of that, but I think that's a close enough rounding to get to $17 million. The general fund dollars is $4 million for the Met Council, $9 million for MnDOT, so combined about $13 million for those, and then the remainder is trunk highway bonds. And if you want to go into more detail about that, I can. The trunk highway bonds, I think I'll let Mr. Arsenal from MnDOT cover that. But I had hoped to have a copy of our enabling language here today with you to present to you. I don't have that legislation yet. That's kind of why I'm just walking through it here. We are having to put the finishing touches on that, and we're still, as Mr. Arsenal mentioned on the bus today, we have to figure out how we split the revenues up from the hot lanes and how that works for transit, how that works for the administration, the operations side of providing that, that hot lane. And we're very close. I'll tell you, and I think I said this on the bus as well, maybe the legislature thinks I ask for a lot. Maybe you don't. But I'm very serious when I say I would like to try to find a way to be able to get this policy language heard the first week of session, get it moved to the full committees, and potentially to the floor as quickly as we possibly can, so that we can give the city of Minneapolis, we can give Metro Transit, and all the partners who work on the who are working on this UPA time to deliver this project, because there is a time certain when we have to deliver it, and the clock is ticking. And you know, we talked, and when we went through the special session this last year to deal with the flood, we had been trying to pull together all the aspects of the policy language we needed for the UPA at that point. Obviously, transportation was not a part of that special session, so that didn't happen, but we could have used that time as well. And time is the essence here, and I'm hoping that cooperatively, the administration, the House, and Senate, that we can agree that this is something that we need to do, because that enabling language, what it does, it allows us to access those federal dollars, which really gives us a big advantage to deliver this on time. The financial piece, which I talked about, the general fund, the trunk highway bonds, and the general obligation bonds, that's working great. That, I am not certain how that is going to be prepared and distributed to the legislature, because I don't know if it's going to be part of a supplemental budget package. I'm not sure if it's going to be part of a transportation funding package. I'm just not sure at this point, so we may know better in the middle of January. I also think some of it depends on what the February forecast is going to look like. I know that the committee realizes that we do have a general fund piece to this, and it looks like there's not a whole lot of general fund money to go around, so we're going to have to be creative about how we move ahead and put together a package to fund the rest of that. But I'll answer any questions.
Before I take questions, Mr. Shetton, can you explain to us in some greater detail the necessity of the 90-day threshold that we've been talking about, and very specifically, so that we can understand and appreciate that more fully.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I know Bernie Arsenault is sitting back here behind me somewhere, and Bernie, I think, is probably the best person to address that question. Bernie deserves some major kudos here. He was one of the main architects in getting the UPA and having that delivered, and I think he's worked with the federal folks, and he can explain that that hard and 90-day rule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Bernie Arsenault. I'm the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety and Operations for MnDOT. With respect to the 90-day timeline for authorizing legislation, that is directly out of our agreement with the USDOT. It requires us to have the authority to implement our proposal within 90 days of the start of the next session. So that begins on February 12th, I think it is, this year. And so we've then got 90 days, as you know, it's directly out of the agreement that we have with USDOT. And really, in the way I look at it, is there are two commitments that we need from the legislature. One is that authorizing legislation becomes a reality and gives us the authority to utilize the shoulder as a lane and price it dynamically in this case. And the second thing, of course, is the commitment for the local match. And just a little bit of additional information on that local match, that $55 million. We have made a commitment at the department, and the administration has made a commitment that we will not defer projects from our existing capital program to fund this. So without additional funding, we probably don't have a UPA.
So Mr. Arsenault, is there anything beyond the agreement? Is there something practical that caused that 90-day agreement, or is it just a standard threshold? Some bureaucrat decided, by gum, the legislature is going to act in 90 days, or they haven't shown their good faith, or is there something really that we're actually trying to get to, like that would cause this project to not be able to occur beyond just some words on a piece of paper?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, I believe that there is not anything real practical to the 90-day. I think it is the idea that they need a commitment that we would show that commitment at the state level within a certain time period. And that was, I believe, even in our negotiations, that changed not because of us, but on their part. So I don't know of anything else. What it does do, though, by getting this passed earlier, as Mr. Shetton had previously talked about it, it enables us to begin some of the really critical work much earlier so that we can deliver it in the aggressive time frame that has been set out.
I would just suggest that's probably your stronger argument right there. And that has been my understanding today. This is the first I've actually heard that it's just, USDOT said such, and so we have to act. As I've been given to understand, as I've participated in some of the conversations, that there's some things that actually have to happen in the real world. And waiting until mid-May or late May will put us further behind in practical terms.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, that's actually why we're interested. That's why the 90-day limit to us does not have a whole lot of meaning. What does have meaning is the earlier that Minneapolis can get going in full on the work to change over Marquette and Second, and the earlier that we can get going on our highway improvement projects that are associated with this, it becomes a much easier path rather than waiting until the end. In fact, we did need to ask for an extension on the Second Marquette work to get to the end of the year just to build in a little more cushion to deliver this project. And so I think that shows the critical nature of moving this forward as early as possible.
Senator Olson, and then I have Senator Houseman.
Representative.
The second time she's been called a senator.
Excuse me, Representative Houseman. Senator Olson.
Something going on in St. Paul, we don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Shepton. You stated that you would have liked to have had it brought up in the dealing with this policy at the special session in order to give more time, and yet you said it's not ready to have been presented to us today. When would it be ready? It would seem if you're going to expect early action, it would be nice to have that language available ahead of time, whether it is for an informational hearing about it or whatever. I think that would contribute to time to have some understanding of it and to a quick passage, rather than just, obviously it needs to be introduced and that won't happen until afterwards, but there would be no law against are being able to review it and get comfortable with it so that it could, in fact, have timely action.
Mr. Shedden.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, you're exactly correct. We have a draft in place. However, it is a rough draft. I suspect that we will have the language that we all agree to, at least within the administration, within the next 10 days. And I would love to have an opportunity to come before your committee in a formal way or an informal way before our session begins to really sit down and discuss this. We had talked about this as part of the running this through the special session. However, we had just recently had received that the UPA, and there was a lot of work. We at that point working. MnDOT has been focused on the bridge at this point, and for us to sit down and actually work this out, I think that we would probably end up with a better bill by coming to you in February than rushing something through in September that wouldn't have that we possibly could have missed something. But
Mr. Chair, Mr. Shipman, I didn't need to hear all the excuses, but I think it is important that we have some advance time And obviously, when we're still in interim and a very short session, that would be helpful. So.
And Senator Olson, I agree. And so when we have language, maybe we can get something scheduled, maybe another joint hearing or individual hearings, or maybe the full transportation committee in January.
And Mr. Chair, we just sent some language to Ms. Berezovsky yesterday, and we're working that through. So we're getting close, but at the same time, we want to make sure we have it right, because this is very important.
Usually she's really fast. I can't believe we don't have something. Yeah. Where is it, Ms. Berezovsky?
She keeps going on tours, and I don't know what she's thinking.
So, Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope you noticed there's another senator has joined us to be invited to the table. It's Senator
Dahl. Senator Dahl, come forward, please.
My question is about your term of enabling language. You keep talking about we need to pass the enabling language. But does the enabling language stand alone without state funding? Or what? How would enabling language get you anywhere if it was never going to be funded within a
Mr. Chetton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, the enabling language is the policy language. That's correct. The idea of the enabling language is that once that is passed, which allows us to basically do a price dynamic shoulder link in 394, when that passes, the policy language, the big piece to that is that it allows us to access those federal dollars, $133 million that are set aside for us to start delivering this project. That allows us to do that. What it doesn't do, and I tried to explain this earlier, is that it does not include the financial piece of this, those trunk highway bonds, GO bonds, general fund dollars. And we will have to come back and address that very quickly. I am just not sure if we're going to have a bill that does an appropriation there for general fund money for GO bonds and trunk highway bonds in one bill. I have a feeling that there are a number of members of the legislature would prefer us not doing that. Once we ask for a general or a GO bonding appropriation, all of a sudden it becomes a vehicle for a larger general obligation bonding bill. And I think I'm not sure where the administration is on this. I'm not sure where you are on this, where Senator Lanks is on this. But we really want to get those federal dollars done as quickly as possible. So if we can do that by passing the policy language, which I'm referring to as the enabling language, we can access that. Otherwise, we are really slowing this down if all of a sudden it becomes a Christmas tree and we start funding our regional park money out of it or Central Core or whatever else.
Representative Housman. I don't see how you have policy language separate from funding, because if we didn't fund it, you wouldn't be able to spend a penny out of federal money, could you?
Or vice versa.
Mr. Chair and Representative
Mr. Shedden.
I think that we would be in a position where if we started spending some of that federal money and we did not deliver the local match, that we would be in a position having to pay that money back.
And
Representative
Paulson. The biggest problem with packaging this as a standalone for funding would be you need 81 votes. And as you know, to get 81 votes, you usually need a regionally balanced package, and serving one community probably
wouldn't
get you 81 votes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, you are basically stating all of the things that are giving you gray hair right now, because we're trying to figure out how that's going to work. You're right. I mean, to have this as part of a general obligation bond, to do those general obligation bonds as a standalone will be extremely difficult. So we're trying to figure out if the governor is going to propose this as part of his general obligation bonding package, and then have a separate transportation funding bill that will take care of the trunk highway piece, and then a supplemental budget bill that will take care of the general fund piece. We have to figure out how that is going to work, and I can tell you that we will have a proposal for you on the financial piece of this by the time session begins. But I can also tell you that we are going to be in a situation where we would like to get that policy language passed as quickly as possible, and we will have a proposal out there that will take care of the state's local commitment to this by the time the session starts as well.
And you know, my
Representative
practical
Hausman.
Observation, Mr. Chair, is I can't imagine separating policy language
from funding. I mean, normally, when we pass the funding, we add whatever policy language relates to that. But passing policy language separate would be, I think, unusual.
Great observation. Thank you. I'll also observe, Representative Hausman, I think we're looking for a balanced package across the entire bonding bill, both in terms of transportation facilities, Central Corridor and others, as well as all the other stuff we do in a bonding bill. We need to always keep that in mind, and you're a great steward of the bonding bill, and I appreciate your service. Representative Holberg, oh, I'm sorry, Representative Hornstein, Holberg, then Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question also to the enabling legislation, Mr. Shetland. Do you anticipate that this will be very specific to I-35 and Cedar Avenue, or does it represent a policy around congestion pricing statewide? Do you have a sense of how that will be crafted yet?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein, the way that we're looking at it right now is that it will be specific to the 35W Cedar Avenue corridor, mostly the 35W because it deals with the dynamically priced fuel limits.
Thank you.
And it'll be a joint bill from the Met Council and that, because since there's aspects that are important to both organizations.
Thank you. Representative Holberg?
Thank you. I have two questions and a request. First of all, is this an all or nothing proposal? In that if the legislature decides they want to do part of it and not the other, what are the dynamics with the feds on that? Number two, how much have you spent already of your 1.whatever million and your 13.2 for your increased transit? So what's the degree of liability for repayment already expended? And then number three, the request is a spreadsheet that shows how much each component costs and what the federal match is, and then any performance objectives that you think this is going to meet or why you think this is such a great idea. And what your goal is for decreasing congestion tied to that portion of the investment.
So, Mr. Shetland, got all three of those?
Yeah, I'll try. All right, I've got lots of help back here, too. You can help me out if I get hung up. But Representative Holberg, it is an all or nothing. The feds expect each of those components to be met in order for the UPA to be realized. That is why when we talked on the bus about some of the technology things that were not funded as part of the federal dollars that we received, we made a commitment to the I guess it was $9 million, I believe, for the technology piece that we would come up with those in order to be eligible to receive that full funding grant or I'm thinking North Star to receive the UPA grant dollars. So yes, it is all or none. As far as what has been expended so far within the or as far as the UPA, I am not sure. I think Bernie can answer that. But your last question, as far as you would like to have a sheet that explains what or how things are going to be spent, what the proposed split between or what the color of money is for what's being used for those, we can certainly provide that. I think I think that's absolutely necessary. I think that we're asking the state for a significant contribution to make sure that this local match is there, and I'm happy to make sure that is provided, and we will do that. But as far as what has been spent so far, I'll let Bernie speak to that, and then we'll keep going.
Mr. Arsenault.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative. We have been funded in two parts right now. There was $1.6 million of value pricing program dollars that came to us, and there was also $13.2 or $3 million that came to us early for buses and on the north 35W piece. Those, as I understand, do not need to be paid back, so that the expenditures we're making in preparing our design for the highway improvements and the buses, that was a commitment by USDOT, and we are able to move forward. Now, to the extent that we're beginning to get into work, like on the transit side, we are doing some work that is being covered right now with our funds in preparation for the deployment of this project that is somewhat at risk, if you will, if this doesn't go through. We're able to get that money back once the legislation and the local match is there. So there's a little bit at risk right now, but we're managing that risk because, again, due to this aggressive timeline, we can't wait. We need to move forward in order to deliver this on time.
Representative Holder.
Thank you. I appreciate the ability to follow up. Define somewhat at risk and whether that's a portion of the 1.2 or it's additional MnDOT funds that are being spent.
Yes.
Mr. Arson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it is a limited risk that we're managing mostly with our own folks working on the projects. So we're utilizing their time to prepare documents. I can't speak to transit and what things are happening there, but at MnDOT level, I think that we're being very cautious as we move forward. But we are in the process of designing those projects right now and doing the environmental studies on them.
Representative Holder, you had another question about performance objectives being you anticipated, or
well,
you're wondering
Chair,
you were anticipated.
Mr. Chair, that was something that I asked for in their documentation. I didn't hear that they were willing to do it, but I'm sure they thought
it well. Okay. Well, we would all like to see that. If you can wait, other folks on the list. I think next I had Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Mr. Arson, isn't it unusual that you can recoup any expenses prior to signing the contract? That'd be unusual, wouldn't it? So you wouldn't get those monies back that you're spending right now.
Mr. Arson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, it's for those where we've already amended the STIP and done the work ahead of time. So we have processed what we need to do in order to or get back those dollars. So there's some work that we did prior to having the STIP amended and all of the other agreements in place. For example, in transit, that work is largely done. In fact, is done now. The highway side is not done yet, so we cannot, other than the $1.6 million that we got ahead of time, we can't get back any of the funds that we're spending right now.
That's what I mean. You actually had those funds prior, so it wouldn't be part of this contract you did.
Correct.
This money before.
Yeah.
The other question I had, Mr. Chair,
Representative,
is in the enabling legislation, just to clarify it, you're talking about enabling legislation for that portion that the state's going to put in. This is not a pass-through. The money goes directly to Metro Council, the UPA, or to the, that isn't a pass-through, is it?
Mr. Arson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leader, this money will actually go from the programs that it comes from. There's, I believe, five different programs, U.S. DOT programs, and it will go to both Met Council and MnDOT, the portions that apply
to
each one.
But the enabling legislation you're speaking of is only the enabling legislation for the portion that comes from the state, and I think that wasn't clear. We don't have to pass enabling legislation for the city of Minneapolis or U Metro to pass that. I just want to clarify.
That's correct.
Though, not on the enabling language, I assume, though, we have to appropriate those dollars that come from the federal government.
I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Great. Representative Leader.
Mr. Chair, too, thank you. Actually, in the trunk highway bonds, I'm not aware that most of the time the trunk highway bonds hasn't been specified to a project. It's just been a blanket appropriation. Is that right? So we don't have to worry about identifying the trunk highway bonds. I mean, that'd be part of the bond baggage.
Mr. Shetton.
Mr. Chair and Chairman Leader, I believe you're right. However, the general obligation bonding dollars will need to be directed to the Met Council, and then the general fund dollars that we're talking about will have to be directed to Met Council and MnDOT.
Thank you. Senator Salzman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm very impressed with this project. Thank you for your work on it, Star. So I think it's great opportunities. But I also feel this sense of urgency to get this project moving. And I just wish that MnDOT had that same sense of urgency with projects in my area in the East Metro, such as Lakota Bridge, that is not going to be done until 2010, a year after this project sees realization. That's not under your responsibility, but it would be very difficult for me to sit here and listen to this and think about today on the news, people in my district, a 45-minute delay to get across the Lakota Bridge, and nothing. No sense of urgency, nothing. That's why I just sit here and I want to support transit. It's good for our state. It's good for every part of our state. So maybe you can carry that back to the administration. That's a comment, not a question, unless you'd like to respond.
May I advise? I had a couple of quick questions, and then I think maybe we should hear from the other folks who are here to share their thoughts with us. I think Representative Hornstein asked us on the bus, but I was distracted at the moment. The money that's raised through the dynamic pricing, congestion pricing, how is that money? What's happening to that money? This, of course, harkens back to 394 and some misunderstandings there. Is it going to be prioritized for transit or not? Just to lay my cards on the table, that's my understanding now. I hear that something different might be happening with that money.
Mr. Chair, members, that is true. That's probably the piece of the legislation that is still yet to be, you know, actually firmed up. We are very close on that, though, and I think, although we are still in discussions, where we're at right now is that we first need to pay for the tolling operation. So we need to be able to fund the maintenance and the operation of the technology that we have out there in order to collect the tolls. Subsequent to that, then, any amount above the cost of the operating cost is what we call that. Above that operating cost, we would take that same amount, and then the second set of, well, let me do it this way. If it costs $1 million to operate this a year, and I'm just using that as a number, if it costs $1 million, then we would take the first million would pay for this, and the second million would go to transit for transit enhancements or operating costs or anything else. And then beyond that, it would be split 50-50. Now, that's just one of the ways we're looking at it. I think we're getting close on that, but that seems to make sense, and we're going to try and close that out.
And then the second question was something that's also come up recently, and that is those lanes converting to general purpose lanes at some point throughout the day. Is that under contemplation, and is that something different than was previously understood?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I think what you're referring to is that there's a portion of time when these will not be pay lanes, and therefore, I guess, general purpose lanes. We are still in the process of finalizing that, where we have the price dynamic shoulder lane north of 42nd. That will be a shoulder sometime during the day, where we'll shut that lane down when there's no congestion. And in the other areas, we're still working through that and getting feedback on that.
Great. Keep us apprised. Thank you. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Senator DeVault. My question is about the concept of the second million. You're saying if it takes $1 million to operate the lane, then the second million goes to transit, and then the third million is split between transit and something else. My question is, if it takes $10 million to operate the lane, then is it the second $10 million that goes to transit? Is it a proportion that's equal to the operating costs? And then when you get to the third multiple of the operating costs, that you divide that? And what do you divide that third chunk between transit and construction and maintenance of that lane? Or other things also?
Mr. Archer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think that you've got it correct. We don't know what the revenues are going to be from the 35W corridor. We anticipate that there may be a greater demand than 394, and we're looking at those numbers. The point is that we anticipate somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, between $500,000 and $1 million to operate the system along there. That'll include the lane control signals and the other things. So let's just say it's 750. So this first 750 goes to that operation. The second 750, whether it's 500, 750, or a million, that amount then would go to transit, and that would establish then a 50-50 split, so to speak. And then everything beyond that would be spent would be split 50-50. Now, all of that revenue that comes from the tolled lanes needs to stay on the corridor.
And that third,
Representative Horton.
Mr. Chair, would be split between transit in the corridor and construction and maintenance in the corridor? Or could that, I mean, I think you kind of answered it, but.
Mr. Arson.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative, it can be spent on enhancements along the corridor, both highway, transit, anything of that nature. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I think it gets a little bit to Senator Saltzman's point earlier is that this is a demonstration project. So what we're doing here is we're demonstrating that certain innovations and technology can be applied and work well in order to provide a more efficient traffic flow. The things that we learn from this corridor can be applied throughout the metro area, and we have a very strong technology infrastructure in the metro area with our freeway management system, and utilizing the information we gain from that, the counts and the congestion numbers and so forth, we can then deploy these strategies throughout the metro and provide benefit for the whole region.
Representative Horton.
Just a final follow-up, and I'm sorry, but I wasn't in the legislature when the 394 lane was put into place, and so if you can just very briefly say what's happening with the money now and in what way is that different than maybe it was contemplated in the beginning?
Mr. Arson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, on the 394 corridor, the legislation states that the operating revenue, or the revenue from the tolls, first goes to pay back the cost of construction, and then it's split 50-50 for transit and highway initiatives along the corridor. In this case, we don't need to worry about paying back the construction, because it's covered through the state funds and the local match and the grant money.
And finally,
Representative.
So does the money on 394 pay its operating expenses first and then repay capital, or does the money go to repay capital before covering its operating?
Mr. Arson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it goes to pay on 394, it goes to pay construction first and then operating. And we're working, you know, on moving that along as we go.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shetton and Mr. Arson. Please stay close, because I'm guessing we'll bring up some more stuff to ask you. We'll call up to the table Mayor Sue Sandel of Richfield, who also chairs the vice chair of the I-35W Solutions Alliance. Welcome. Thanks for hosting us.
And can please, you hear me? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And while you're at the table, I'll just say your staff member Mike has been a great help, and we appreciate all of the hospitality and all of the assistance.
Well, we're happy to welcome you to Richfield. Whatever happens on the freeways affects Richfield. We are surrounded and divided by freeways. As you know, we have Crosstown on the north, Trunk Highway 77, Cedar Avenue Freeway on our east, 494 on our south, and 35W runs right through the middle of us. So what happens on the freeways affects us. What doesn't happen on the freeways also affects us. So if nothing moves on the freeways, we're congested. People get off the freeways, they drive on local streets, they impact our neighborhoods. So Richfield is very supportive of going forward with the UPA. We think this will be a positive solution on 35W, and we are supportive. I will take off my Mayor Pro Tem hat and put on my 35W hat. As Vice Chair of the 35W Solutions Alliance, I wanted to speak in favor of the UPA as well. The 35W Solutions Alliance includes all of the members directly impacted by this proposal. We include the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Burnsville, and Lakeville, and Hennepin County, Dakota County, and Scott County as members on our group. In addition, we have representatives from Met Council, Metro Transit, and MnDOT on a regular basis at our meetings. So we are very much attuned to what's happening on 35W and are very supportive. We are just in the process of adopting our legislative agenda for the year, and I can only give you what the draft proposal says because it hasn't been adopted officially yet. But our first agenda is to maintain and build a robust multimodal transportation system in the metro area. Our second is to provide permanent new revenues to meet our transportation needs. And our third one is to support the UPA agreement. So we are most positive about this. This is currently probably our number one top thing that we think needs happening, just because we strongly believe in matching dollars and obtaining whatever federal dollars we can to support improvements in the metro system. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor Sandel. Any questions for the mayor? Sounds like you covered it. Thank you very much. Next up, we have another local official. We have Steve Elkins, who's on the Bloomington City Council. He also wears I-35W Solutions Alliance hat. Welcome, Councilmember Elkins. Also, I think you worked quite hard in your professional life on developing the UPA.
Did you know? No, it's just all allocation. So I also acted through the Citizens League and various.
You did it all for free. All right, thank you.
I did all for free. like Sue, of course, Bloomington's also very heavily impacted by traffic conditions on the Interstate 35W corridor, and the impacts, I think, in both Richfield and Bloomington spill off of the highways and into our neighborhoods. We're in the middle right now of a whole traffic calming program for the area to the mid-north central west Bloomington that's very heavily impacted by congestion on 35W and the section of 494 between Highway 100 and 35W, where we have hundreds, if not thousands, of cars a day spilling off of those roadways and into our residential neighborhoods just because those two roadways are so congested right now. So we have a very strong stake in making sure that this goes forward. Other thing that I really wanted to point out is that we have a very rare and unique opportunity to actually coordinate redevelopment in the area of 494 and 35W in conjunction with this project. And it almost never happens that you have an opportunity to do a redevelopment project that you're trying to do as a transit-oriented development at the same time that the transit component of it is being planned exactly in parallel. And we'd really like to see that come, that stay on track. United Properties has assembled a critical mass of properties in the area immediately adjacent to where the 82nd Street BRT station would be on 35W, and they're looking at breaking ground on the first phases of that development as soon as this spring. If we can keep the planning for the development and the BRT on track, I think we have an opportunity to actually make this a true transit-oriented development based on BRT, which a lot of people say that it can't really be done, but I think we're starting to see that at different places around the country. And in conjunction with that, I would really hope that then we make the BRT on the 35W corridor be a high amenity service that is attractive to suburban commuters. I don't see any reason why it can't be every bit as attractive as LRT service. I've seen examples of this around the country, like the Orange Line in the San Fernando Valley in L.A., where a BRT service that's every bit as attractive as LRT service can be offered. In fact, I think the Orange Line in L.A. is carrying about 23,000 passengers a day, and it's actually out-carrying the Gold Line, LRT line in L.A. So, I think the other thing, and this is not going to be, I understand it's not going to be able to be part of the UPA, but I think it's going to be really hard to get the R and BRT if we don't actually have online stations at 82nd Street and Lake Street in Minneapolis. So I'm hoping that we can find a way, as on the heels of the UPA project, funded projects themselves, to follow back up with those two stations as soon as possible thereafter. Thank you.
Even though Representative Hornstein's a chair and can just pipe up anytime he wants, he's being very polite and deferential to the Senate, so he's asking
thank
his
you.
Turn
thank
to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, Representative Chair Hornstein.
Thank you. I really appreciate your testimony, Councilmember Mellon, because I think there's two things that I'm very interested in, perhaps you could elaborate on just a little bit.
Sure.
This is the first I've heard of transit-oriented development being tied to bus rapid transit. And is there a correlation in terms of your or the city's conversations with these potential developers? I mean, have they actually said, we're coming in here anticipating that you're going to have enhanced transit in this corridor?
Oh, very definitely. In the initial presentations from United Properties, even before they started talking to staff, the concepts that they presented in their first meetings with staff and council, they already knew that dot was going to be there at the edge of the development of 35W for this as a result of this project. United Properties also owns the South Point office building, which is immediately adjacent to 35W at 82nd Street, and already in conversations with them as there's a surface parking lot between their building and 35W at 82nd Street, which is being evaluated as one of the potential sites, at least in the short term, for the park and ride in that. application. So, you know, the guys from United Properties very definitely get it and see this as a transformative development. In terms of other examples around the country, the best one I've seen is the Silver Line in Boston, which is spurring an absolute renaissance in the Roxbury area of South Boston. It's the transformation is just amazing, and now that the Orange Line has been in operation for I think close to 2 years now, I know the council member in LA from that district. She serves with me on the National League of Cities Transportation Committee, and now that it's established, it's carrying over 20,000 passengers a day. They're starting to see development interest at the nodes along that BRT line as well.
Thank you. And very quickly, Mr. Chair,
Representative Harson,
the second point you made, which I think is worth highlighting, is your point about the online stations.
Yeah.
And, you know, my concern is that we really maintain the transit advantage all along this line, and I think that's a way to do it. We heard about, you know, the possibility of using air rights for that particular station. What does the city have a preference as to where the location, you know, would be? I mean, is it in addition to you, are folks talking about that particular model as a preferred?
Yeah, I think there, certainly staff members would prefer the air rights version. I think if it works, that's great. City staff is always motivated in large part by the desire to keep all possible property on the tax rolls. but if operationally a station over 35W works, I think that would be great. And it's my understanding that I think Met Council staff and MnDOT staff were going to meet to talk about that yesterday, so there may be an additional insight that their staffs may be able to offer on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Councilmember Elkin? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Councilman Elkins, for your leadership and your advocacy on this. What I wanted to find out is, you know, we know 35W 494 interchange is already a major bottleneck in this area. What kind of impact do you think this is going to have if we have an 82nd Street station parking right on the regular traffic going through this area? Is that going to relieve it, or is it going to just complicate matters? Is there something else we need to do for that interchange in addition to building a parking right at that location?
I think the engineers pretty much worked out that it is feasible to put an online station on the 82nd Street bridge. I think that's kind of the default assumption. I think, though, that they're now working on other alternatives, such as this station built between 82nd Street and American Boulevard, but the engineers would have to answer that question. Yeah, it can be done. I'm assured of that. Thanks.
Any further questions? Thank you, Councilman. Next, we have another local official. Councilmember Sandy Colvinroy from Minneapolis chairs the Transportation and Public Works Committee. Welcome.
Thank you. It's hard to believe it, for me anyway, that it was only 3 years ago on a not very warm morning out in Burnsville with the mayors of Burnsville, Lakeville, and Minneapolis that a lot of local elected officials and state elected officials, some of you here today, were talking to commuters and the media about the idea of bus rapid transit in 35W. And a lot of people didn't know what it was even. Now we have this very exciting possibility of the Urban Partnership Agreement allowing us in this region to get to that vision of putting real bus rapid transit together with managed lanes and high occupancy vehicle opportunities that work so well in other corridors all together in I-35W, which has been the lifeline for many cities and jurisdictions along the way. So I really want to emphasize 2 points today, because I know you have more speakers coming. One's already been talked about. It's hard to put the R in BRT if the buses can speed down the freeway and the buses and those cars in the managed lanes can move quickly and they hit gridlock in downtown Minneapolis. So the 2nd and Marquette Streets parts of the project are essential. I want you to know that we are really excited in Minneapolis about improving life for all the commuters that come from the south, but it's also going to help those from the north, and sometimes that's missed. The commuters from the northern suburbs will also get better times and more convenience. my other point, and I hope this underscores how excited Minneapolis is and how committed the elected officials of Minneapolis are to this vision, and that is the issue of timing. Minneapolis has begun the work already. Our engineers, who I meet with regularly as transportation chair, have been queuing up for us the work that will be necessary, laying out the kind of schedules that we're going to need to meet in order to meet that federal deadline. And they are very aggressive. This past spring, you'd all be excused for not noticing that Minneapolis did pass our Downtown Transportation Action Plan for the next 10 years. That was done very quickly, and quickly is not easy, as you all know, when you've got so many interests sitting right at the edge of that street or wanting to use the street. But we got it done a little more quickly than we even expected we could, because we wanted it to be a part of the Urban Partnership application, which it is. We also are willing to step forward and begin some of the work without the assurance of matching funds. And again, I hope you take that as an expression of just how committed Minneapolis is to being a partner in this regional solution. And I'm sorry Senator Saltzman isn't here, but I know Representative Houseman is also from this part of the metro. And we are only one side of the metro, but this is a project that will help a large part of the metro region. And no one has said any differently. I didn't mean to imply that Representative Saltzman did. This project, however, is going to be, I think everybody recognizes, on a very long list and waiting around a long time to come together if all of the money needs to come from here in our state and through our Met Council and through our local property taxpayers. And I'm sure that no one wants to leave the federal funds on the table. So we are hoping that our partners in the administration and MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council will do everything they can to secure the state matching funds. Thank you very much. Speed is our friend. We really don't have any options in this case but to move fast. The city engineer, Steve Cott, he's with me here today. If we could answer any questions for you.
Thank you, Council Member. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Given the fact Senator Saltzman isn't here, I think what I would need to share with anyone in the audience from the West Metro, this did sort of take our breath away. We heard about the Urban Partnership Agreement and then discovered $188.3 million is all going to be spent in the West Metro. I can't even tell you what a stunning bit of knowledge that was. So just so that people understand how really difficult this is, given the fact that she isn't here, I think I just needed to underscore that is a very, very difficult bit of information.
Thank you, Representative Houseman. I think I can understand it, and as well, of course, as you have to speak to the people who live in the East Metro every day. But I have, in a previous life, worked for Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin through many years of negotiations about regional transportation, and I do understand the necessity of balancing where we put our dollars and where we're growing. I'm sure it took your breath away. It took my breath away.
We worry that it's going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's what we worry about. We worry that where you place your investment becomes then a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Councilmember, you served on the Metropolitan Parks and Open Space Commission as well, didn't you?
I did.
So that speaks to your regional perspective as well.
Yes,
so.
I guess that's true. I did sit with members from the seven counties for several years talking about regional balancing investment.
And Councilmember, I'll just take this opportunity to let my committee members know that also joining us in the audience is Councilmember Betsy Hodges, who chairs or the City of Minneapolis' Intergovernmental Relations Committee. And so if you haven't yet met Council Member Hodges, I'm sure you will, because she is present at the Capitol quite a bit throughout. And to her left is Pierre Ouellette, who works for the city as well.
Thank you very much, Senator. I should have done that.
And one more introduction while we're doing this. I think I saw Allison Harris from Congressman Ellison's office is here, too. And Of course, Congressman Ellison has been a real partner with us on this because of the federal pieces of all of that. So we're really glad to have you in this hemisphere.
Great. Anything else for Councilmember Colvin-Roy? I will call to the table, thank you, I'll call to the table Will Branning, Dakota County Commissioner, who also serves on the Dakota County Regional Rail Commission. I think, Commissioner Branning, you, I think you were the mayor of Apple Valley when I was living out there. I should mention that we were about a block away from my old house when we drove across on 160th Street.
In answer to that question, yes, I was the first city council in the city of Apple Valley in 1969, and I've stayed with it. And transportation and transit have been part of my agenda since well into the 70s, and was part of the original opt-out legislation advocate back in the early 1980s. So I've had a great opportunity to work with fellow representatives and senators and local officials and Met Council specifically, because we work together, we get things done. And what I'm here today for really is to see what most of you have to say about this kind of a project, UPA, and also thank you. Because to thank you means maybe we can move forward and maybe we can get some money. I've been working on the Cedar Transitway since 1997 when I came to many of you back then. Then I think Senator Pete Peterson was a
fellow. We're all getting promoted
mayor.
Today.
I promoted him because he's going to go there in just a matter of time. He was mayor and council member in Bloomington and so on. What I want to do also inform you a little bit, Senator Holmstein, we are doing a transit-oriented development. If this goes through, we'll advance it by at least 5, maybe 10 years in the Cedar Grove area. Cedar Avenue was started out to be a BRT. We started out with a study in 1997 to look at the different modes of transit that we could put on Cedar Avenue. We went through a whole study. Light rail was an element, and BRT was another element. But the Minnesota River put a crimp in light rail, because to cross that size of span with a rail system without the bridge being part of the element, we just couldn't afford it. Nor could we afford it, both in time and dollars. So that put the crimp in it. But I don't want to take too much time of yours today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you today. And I'm always available and call at any time should you ever want me to testify for anything, or should you want to have a tour or visit with Dakota County. Dakota County is now undertaking the Robert Street corridor study that will take transit from the Union Station in St. Paul all the way to the Umore Park in Rosemount, and the study is undergoing right now. We will be back with you, for you, I should say, before you to look for some more money to make that happen. But we do have $500,000 that we're working on right now, and we won't finish that study with only $500,000. So that is an element on the east side of Dakota County. West side, we have 35W, and part of the middle is Cedar Avenue. We would have had probably BRT up and running, but we made a decision. Our decision was, let's not improve Cedar Avenue without for BRT only. Let's improve Cedar Avenue so that it has a value for all modes of transportation in the year 2015 and 2030. So that's where we are today. We're working very hard. This advances many of the elements along the Cedar Corridor with automation and technology. We should be well on our way to 2015 with the completion of this project. 35W is a new adventure, and we hope that that'll all happen in BRT, and we'll see that all of that working together in 2010. That's my hope, that's my goal, and I thank you all for coming to Dakota County. Somebody said that everything went to the west. I think Dakota County's in the south.
Depends on where it ends up.
Okay. Thank you so much for the opportunity to work with you today.
Any questions for Commissioner Branning? Chair Hornstein, you want to take over?
Thank you.
We have no additional people who have signed up to testify, but if there are those in the audience who would like to testify, we certainly have about 20 minutes until we really do need to leave. So So I would just invite anyone else who may want to make some brief comments before the committee. We've got 15 or so captive legislators, so it's a good opportunity. Oh, see, there you go.
Citizens
I knew I'd get someone with that.
Good civic. Civic.
No prepared remarks, but I'm Bob DeBoer from the Citizens League. And, this
Bob,
is our
Bob, can you grab the microphone?
Oh. Bob DeBoer from the Citizens League. The Urban Partnership Agreement is something we started working on last February at the Road Pricing Summit, which some of you were, I know Representative Leader was there, and some others. When we found out this opportunity was available, and we really think this is a way to start integrating our transportation elements by having the pricing of solo drivers and increased transit options, and to look at this for a potential model for how we deal with this in the metro areas go forward. This will be a number one priority for us this session, and also we'd like to look at ways we can fund transportation in the future that are maybe a little different than what we do now, that is more directly tied to use and the benefits of the transportation facilities that we build. And that if we're going to make big new investments in transportation now, that we also start developing these other ways of paying that over the long term can grow into real sustainable solutions. So that's just my short off-the-cuff comment. But I hope we can do something with this UPA process. I understand the challenge is large to come up with the $50 or $55 million, but I think the benefits are large as well. And we do need to find ways to balance it with the other folks around the metro and the state, and maybe we can find some of those solutions this session.
Thank you. Any questions from Mr. DeBoer? Okay. Thank you for that. Any other final comments from anyone from the public or members of either the House or Senate committee? Oh, we have someone. Please. State your name and any organizational affiliation.
I'm Sandy Hewitt. I am on the Plymouth City Council. I'm also chair of Suburban Transit Authority and chair of the 494 Corridor Commission. And both the 494 Corridor Commission and Suburban Transit is very supportive of the UPA. We realize that it's a large amount of money, but we are supportive of it and transit in general. So in regards to the suburban transit, the concern that we have is you have Lakeville as part of that and the transit taxing district. So it's something I think you're going to need to address is the transit taxing district and what you're going to do with that. So it's something to look at, and hopefully you'll address it, and hopefully you'll get enough money, I guess, is the bottom line. So, but we are supportive of it, and we appreciate you having us today.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Council Member Hewitt? Yeah. Thank you for testifying. All right. Okay, any last folks here? This is your chance. We're rarely ahead of schedule. Okay. Well, I'll close the public testimony part of our hearing, and I would just open it up then for any members of the committee who may want to have some final thoughts. Questions, concerns. This time, Chairman Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't help sitting here as an outsider. I'm a member of the committee and a member of the legislature, and I feel that I'm a state legislator. But I couldn't help feeling again today the problems we had with highway financing. We always had the highway rural fight and the highway transit fight. I mean, metro rural fight and highway transit. And it's pretty evident here, again, when I hear the different areas of the metropolitan area saying, well, somebody's getting this and I'm not getting this. And I think till we get over that statewide and metro-wide, we're never going to have a transportation system. That's where we've been fighting it all the way through. And we can't do it all at one time. I think we have to start somewhere. So I just couldn't help but observe that again because I'm kind of not in the loop here in the metro group, but I can sure feel it. Thank you.
Attention.
You represent the leader.
Senator, Chairman Dibble.
Well, now you started something, Chairman Leader. No, I was going to say something similar, which was the tension, I think, is a product of the financing problems that we have.
Right.
I think a lot of the tension would be removed if we figured out how to fund an adequate system so it wasn't, you're getting what out of, you know, very precious and scarce resources. We could solve this problem and we wouldn't be feeling this way. And I think we didn't feel this way when we passed the bill last year because everyone got something. You know, we were starting to really get on the path of that. I even got an award from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Me, urban core metro lefty dude, got an award from the CGMC for my work on behalf of Greater Minnesota transportation, specifically transit priorities. That was a testament to how we came together last year. And I'm optimistic because I don't feel like we're coming. You know, what the argument we're having is in a discrete context, as absent any money. But I feel like we're still together on finding sufficient resources so that we can take care of West Metro, East Metro, Greater Minnesota, et cetera. I got to testify or speak on the panel at the St. Paul Chamber of Commerce a week or so ago, and at which I articulated, you've got an East Metro transit priority. I'm your guy. My priority is the Central Corridor. It's working with East Metro members. I'm the charter founding member of the East-West Coalition. Myself and Chair Marco kind of coined that kind of as a cute term to talk about how we had come together, and now we see Senator Saltzman and Sieben and Bonhoff in the West and others, you know, from suburban areas, Representative Portman, many others, everyone coming together around shared priorities. So it was illustrative to have these kinds of conversations because it speaks to a larger goal that we all share.
And Mr. Chair, some
yes.
of the people in the state see the whole metro area as east.
And yeah, to the two chairs' points, yes, Senator.
Well, thank you. On the point of this tension, though, if this project isn't a success, then we're really going to have a mess. We're going to go backward instead of forward. So it's essential that we do come together on this project if we want to migrate that success to other areas of the city or the state. I think it's real essential that we work together.
Thank you. And I think the two chairs, you know, the points you raise are very well taken, and others on the on each committee. I think where this comes down to this project, and one of my concerns, quite frankly, is that because our transportation funding system is so broken, we are relying on $13 million of general fund money as we are running a deficit to make a federal match. And I think that's concerning, and I hope that as we're putting together the ultimate funding package, not only for this project but for the broader transportation finance, but we keep that in mind, that we ought not to be relying on general fund dollars to make a simple federal match. This is an important project, and I think the infusion of federal money is not to be ignored, but I want to make sure that we do it right and that it meets the transit needs of all of the communities, and that if we're going to do bus rapid transit, let's do it right and let's make sure we put the R. I think that's a critical point that's come out of our conversation today. I'll have Representative Hausman give us our last word here, and then I'll make some final comments, and then we'll adjourn.
I think all of these closing comments reminded me of this, and that is because we're so desperate for federal money, because we are lacking state dollars, we continue to be bound by that cost effectiveness index. And so as a result, we design and build these corridors the way Washington wants us, by their measures, rather than what might be best for us. And you may know that some other cities have already decided that Washington money comes at too high a price when that is the case, and that they've started to say, some of our corridors we're not going to depend on Washington money. We're going to build and design and pay for ourselves. And that's another luxury we don't have because of our lack of funding. And I think all of this leads to this kind of final observation, which is funding is broken, but so is governance. We have a structure that somebody just referenced the transit taxing district. We have a 7-county metro area, which all of us know is simply, I mean, now it's just a fiction. There is no such thing as a 7-county metro area anymore. And so planning within those boundaries probably doesn't serve us as a state either. So I think that idea of funding leads us perhaps to make some bad decisions, and the governance limits us in terms of having really a good statewide view.
Thank you. And before I hand it over to Senator Dibble, I just again wanted to thank all of the members that came on the tour and to the hearing. I know this is a very busy time, and to take time out and to learn more about this important project, both its potential, but also some of the challenges associated with it, is very important that we do this now, because this will be coming up early in the session. So I really appreciate everyone's time. Of course, the MnDOT and Met Council staffs and city staff, City of Bridgefield, and then our legislative staff. Thank you for making this day possible. It was very helpful, and please make sure that you know, we keep in touch, you know, as legislators with each other about this. And of course, Mr. Shetman, I think, is the key person at the Met Council, who will be, of course, very happy to entertain additional questions if you have them. You weren't able to think of any today, but to go home and, as you're stuck in your car commuting, think of some additional questions for Mr. Shetman. Or on the bus, or if you're on the bus stuck in traffic.
Or the train.
Mr. Shetman will be happy to take your questions. So with that, Senator Dibble, any final thoughts or comments on the
Thanks. No, I just also wanted to echo thanks again, and thanks to City of Richfield for hosting us. Thanks to Mike for helping us out. Hopefully we didn't leave too many crumbs behind. Thank you for letting us eat in your chamber. I don't know if
leave no crumbs behind.
Yeah. And thanks to the committee. We will, to Senator Olson's earlier point and request, once we get some legislation in hand, I think we'll have a pre-hearing on that, on the bill itself, and have more conversation. With that, anything further from the committee? That we're adjourned.
Let's say the bus will leave in about, 5 minutes?